Picture this. You show up at the airport for your private pilot check ride. You've been studying for months. Airspace, weather, performance charts, you can do it in your sleep. You walk out to the airplane, open the cockpit door, start your pre-flight scan, and the oil temperature gauge needle is just sitting there, pegged at the bottom of the arc, not moving. Your examiner walks up, clipboard under one arm, and looks at the cockpit, looks at you, and asks, very calmly, "Is this airplane legal to fly today? What do you say?" If your answer is, "I'm not sure," today's segment is exactly what you need. I'm Pattern on Traffic, Pattern here on Radio Hangar, and today we are going deep on one of the most practically important regulations in Part 91, FAR 91.205. The required instruments and equipment for flight. This is the regulation that tells you exactly what your airplane must have. Working, functional, not just present, before you taxi to the runway. Get it wrong on your check ride. You fail the oral before you ever touch the airplane. Get it wrong in real life, and you could be operating an unairworthy aircraft without knowing it. Let's walk through this together. Quick word from our sponsor first. Shout out to AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of this journey. First solo, private pilot certificate, instrument rating, commercial. There's a coin for every milestone that actually means something. AviationSoul.com. Now, FAR 91.205 for day VFR flight, the list most pilots learn through the mnemonic A Tomato Flames. 13 letters, 13 items. And I want to walk through each one not just as a letter to memorize, but as a piece of equipment that exists on this list for a reason. A is for airspeed indicator, the instrument that tells you how fast air is moving over the wings. This is how you know whether you're above stall speed, whether you're within the white arc for flap extension, whether you're approaching VNE, the never exceed speed. Without it, you're guessing at some of the most critical flight parameters there are. T is for tachometer, one for each engine. In a fixed pitch propeller aircraft like a Cessna 172, the tach is how you set power for every phase of flight. Cruise, climb, descent, it also tells you if the engine is developing the power it should. A low tach reading at full throttle on the runway is telling you something is wrong before you ever leave the ground. O is for oil pressure gauge, for each engine using a pressure lubrication system. Think about what oil pressure tells you. The oil is circulating, the engine is lubricated. Lose that pressure indication in flight, and you have, depending on the engine and the circumstances, maybe minutes before metal starts contacting metal without lubrication. The oil pressure gauge is an early warning system. It tells you the engine is about to fail before it actually fails. That timing matters. M is for manifold pressure gauge required for engines with altitude controlled or supercharged induction. Most carbureted training aircraft, your Cessna 172s, Piper Cherokees, Diamond DA-20s, don't need this one. But the moment you step into a turbocharged or supercharged aircraft, manifold pressure is a primary power control input. Know whether your airplane needs it. AE is for altimeter, your window to vertical position. Without an accurate altimeter, you cannot reliably maintain terrain separation, comply with altitude assignments, or stay out of the airspace you don't belong in. T is for temperature gauge for liquid-cooled engines. Situational. Most training aircraft are air-cooled. The cylinders are cooled by airflow, not by a coolant system. But if you're flying something with liquid cooling, that temperature gauge is monitoring an active thermal system. Ignore it, and you have a very expensive problem. O is for oil temperature gauge, and here's where a lot of pilots get tripped up, because they see two O's in the mnemonic and assume one of them must be a repeat. It is not. Oil pressure and oil temperature are two separate gauges measuring two different things. Pressure tells you oil is flowing. Temperature tells you how hot that oil is getting. Hot oil breaks down. It loses its viscosity and its ability to protect the engine under load. That's why your pre-flight includes a minimum oil temperature before applying takeoff power. The engine needs oil that's warm enough to do its job. Both gauges are required. Both matter. F is for fuel gauge, one for each fuel tank. Not one total, one per tank. This matters because in an aircraft with multiple tanks, you need to know the fuel state of each one independently. Especially when you're managing fuel manually, switching tanks, calculating range, partial fuel information has led to fuel exhaustion accidents. The regulation is specific for a reason. L is for landing gear position indicator. Required only for aircraft with retractable gear. If you're flying fixed gear, the gear status is self-evident. The wheels are there, you can see them or feel them. But in a Beechcraft Bonanza, a Piper Arrow, a Mooney, a gear position indicator is what stands between you and a gear-up landing. On retractable gear aircraft, it is not optional equipment, it is required. A is for anti-collision lights. There's a nuance here that shows up on exams. This requirement applies specifically to aircraft certificated after March 11, 1996. Older aircraft manufactured before that date aren't required to have them under this rule, though many do. For anything modern, your strobe system or rotating beacon is a required item. M is for magnetic direction indicator. The compass, the analog, liquid-filled compass bolted to the windshield or instrument panel that needs no electricity and has essentially no moving parts that fail conventionally. It just points north. Under VFR flight, it is both the simplest instrument in the cockpit and one of the most fundamentally important. E is for emergency locator transmitter, your ELT. In the event of a crash, this device is designed to activate automatically and begin transmitting your location so search and rescue can find you. There are important details here. The older 21.5 MHz units are being phased out in favor of 406 MHz units that interface with modern satellite rescue systems. There are battery replacement schedules tied to flight hours and calendar time. There are inspection requirements. But from a pure airworthiness standpoint, you need one, it needs to be functional, and you need to know where it is. S is for safety belts. Every person on board gets one, no exceptions. That's a tomato flames. 13 required items for day VFR flight. Here's something I wish someone had made clearer to me early in training. The mnemonic is a memory tool. The examiner is not testing whether you can recite 13 letters. The examiner is testing whether you can walk up to an airplane and actually determine if it is airworthy. That requires a different skill. It requires you to understand what each item does, why it's required, and this is critical, what you do when one of them stops working. Which brings us back to that oil temperature gauge. The regulation that governs inoperative equipment is FAR 91.213. And this is the decision tree you need to have internalized before you ever face a broken gauge on the ramp. Step 1. Does this aircraft have an FAA-approved minimum equipment list, or MEL? An MAEL is a document specific to that aircraft that defines which items can be inoperative, under what conditions, and what actions must be taken. Airline and charter aircraft almost always have them. Most small general aviation aircraft do not. If your training aircraft doesn't have an MAEL, go to Step 2. Step 2, does the pilot's operating handbook or the type certificate data sheets include a list of instruments and equipment that are not required for airworthiness, often called a COEL, or kind of operations equipment list? If the broken item appears on that list, and it has been properly deactivated and placarded inoperative, you may be legal to fly. But verify that the item isn't required for the specific operation you're about to conduct. Step 3. Is the inoperative item required for the flight you're planning? This is where 91.205 comes back in. If the broken gauge is on the list for your type of flight, day VFR, night VFR, or IFR, and steps 1 and 2 haven't cleared you, the aircraft is not airworthy. You do not fly. Let me give you a concrete example. Walk out to the airplane and the clock has a dead battery. The display is blank. For day VFR flight, there is no clock requirement in a tomato flames. So for a day VFR local flight, the blank clock alone does not ground you under 91.205. Now change the scenario. You filed IFR, same broken clock, same blank display. In instrument flight, the clock is a required instrument. Timing is built into almost every instrument procedure. Holding patterns, approaches, missed approach timing, blank clock, IFR flight plan, legal alternative timekeeping not established. You are not legal to fly IFR. Same broken instrument. Two completely different answers. That's why you cannot just know the list, you have to understand the context. Now let's move to night VFR, where the equipment requirements expand. The standard mnemonic for night VFR additions is FLAPS. F is for fuses. One spare set, or at least three spare fuses of each type used in the aircraft. If a fuse blows in flight, you need to be able to replace it. Many modern aircraft use circuit breakers instead, which can be reset in flight, so this requirement may not be prominent in your airplane. But know how your aircraft's electrical protection is configured. L is for landing light, but only if the aircraft is operated for hire. A student pilot flying a night solo cross-country in a rented aircraft is not legally required to have a working landing light. A commercial pilot flying fare-paying passengers is. That distinction matters, and it shows up on knowledge tests. A is for anti-collision lights, already required on newer aircraft for day VFR. Now explicitly required at night for all aircraft. The strobe or beacon is what makes you visible against the dark sky to other traffic. P is for position lights. Nav lights, red on the left wingtip, green on the right wingtip, white on the tail. These lights communicate your direction of travel. If another aircraft is converging on you at night, your position lights are what tells them where you're headed and whether there's a conflict. Required anytime you fly after official sunset, is for an adequate source of electrical energy to power all electrical equipment used for the operation. At night, your dependency on electricity is dramatically higher than during the day. Position lights, landing light, radios, instruments, if you lose electrical power on a night flight, your options narrow fast. The regulation is requiring you to think about this before departure. Now, grab card for IFR flight. Everything above, plus these 8 items. G is for generator or alternator. IFR flight depends on electrical power continuously. You need a reliable source that can sustain your systems for the entire flight. R is for radio. Two-way communications appropriate for the route and navigation equipment sufficient for the route to be flown. If your IFR routing requires a VOR, you need a working VOR. If you're flying an approach requiring specific equipment, that equipment needs to be functional before you enter. IMCA is for sensitive, adjustable altimeter. Not just any altimeter, one that can be set to the current altimeter setting, so your altitude readings are accurate and consistent with the airspace system. The word sensitive has regulatory meaning here. B is for ball, the slip-skid indicator, the small inclinometer tube with the black ball that tells you whether your flight is coordinated. In IMC, this instrument has no electrical dependence. It just tells you the truth about your coordination. It's simple, reliable, and required. C is for clock, hours, minutes, and seconds, with a sweep second hand or digital display. Timing is woven through instrument procedures in ways you don't fully appreciate until you're flying them. Missed approach point, timed legs, holding entries. Accurate time, readable at a glance, is required. A is for attitude indicator, the artificial horizon, the instrument that replaces the natural horizon you cannot see when you're in the clouds. Gyroscopically driven, either vacuum or electrically powered, depending on the aircraft. Under IFR, the attitude indicator is the cornerstone of your instrument scan. Everything else orbits around it. R is for rate of turn indicator. Your turn coordinator or turn and bank indicator, under instrument conditions, this tells you whether the aircraft is in a standard rate turn and whether the wings are actually level. It also gives you partial panel capability if your attitude indicator fails. D is for distance measuring equipment or an RNAV system equivalent, but only when operating at or above flight level 240, where VOR navigation would otherwise require DME. For most general aviation IFR flying at lower altitudes, this requirement may not apply, but know where the threshold is. That's grab card layered on top of Edomato Flames. 4. IFR flight, you're carrying both lists simultaneously. Here's how the Airman Certification Standards approach this on your checkride knowledge area. PA.I covers aircraft systems and airworthiness. The examiner is not just asking you to define Edomato Flames, they are presenting you with scenarios and watching whether you can apply the framework, consult the documents, apply the relevant regulations, reach a defensible decision. The attitude indicator is showing a 30-degree bank on the ground and not erecting. The aircraft is not equipped with an MAL, you're planning a day VFR flight. Can you go? Walkthrough 91.213 Day VFR is the attitude indicator on the Edomato Flames list. It is not. Day VFR does not require an attitude indicator. Is it on the COIL as an item that can be inoperative? Check the POH. Is it placarded? If it can be deactivated and placarded, and your flight is day VFR only, you may be legal. But should you go? There's a difference between legal and smart. The regulations establish a floor. Your judgment establishes the ceiling. A malfunctioning attitude indicator that's giving you false indications on the ground is giving you that information for a reason. A legal flight into deteriorating weather in an airplane with a suspect attitude indicator is a poor decision, even if it clears the regulatory minimum. The regulations and your pilot judgment are meant to work together. Neither one alone is enough. One last thing, and this matters more than anything else in this segment. Schedule pressure. The most dangerous moment for inoperative equipment isn't the check ride. It's the real flight, on a real day, with somewhere real to be. The weather is reasonable. The flight is short. And something on the airplane is not quite right. That's when the reasoning starts to bend. It's probably okay. We'll be extra careful. It's just a short hop. Every item on the A Tomato Flames list is there because aviation accident history demonstrated that its absence contributed to losses. These are not bureaucratic line items, they are lessons distilled from bad days. When you treat the equipment list as a hurdle to clear so you can get going, you're missing the entire point. The process exists. Use it, NO91.205, NO91.213, and when something is broken, the question, should I fly today, deserves a real answer, not a rationalization. Title 14 of the Code of Federal Regulations Part 91 is the primary source here, alongside the FAA's Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge. Good resources at radiohanger.com. I'm Pattern. See you next time.